The Gestalt Gardener podcast is brought to you by Varicosity Vein Center, providing health assessment screenings and compassionate care to improve your vascular functionality and quality of life. Our doctors and vein specialists offer solutions to painful varicose veins, spider veins, and other venous diseases to our patients. Now offering complimentary vein screenings in Jackson, Madison, and Ridgeland. Information and appointment scheduling at varicosityveincenter.com.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
Yeah, Java, I was in there looking at those two boxes of donuts. Almost I had to run in here, put my headphones on. There's two boxes of donuts in there. I'm thinking one donut has the calories of two beers. You know, whatever floats your boat. Maybe I could have half a donut.
So you have to just take your pick. Which one you want to do? The donut now, the beer later?
Well, you know, I walk in, you know, in this 4 miles round trip, and that's 400 calories. So in theory, I could have a donut and a beer.
You worked it. You earned it, as they well, say. You know. You earned it.
Hey, folks, we're going to be talking about gardening today. How about you? You want to join us? It's real, real easy. It's toll-free. And we're just going to be talking about gardening. I'm not going to try to sell you anything or talk anything. I have, in my own garden, I have personal agendas of things that I want to do and I want to try and experiment and statements and all like that. But it doesn't matter to me or anybody else what you do in your garden. You know, it is your own row to hoe. So whatever it is you want to do, whatever hoes your row, we're going to be talking about that. And if you want to give us a call, it's toll free, 1-877-MPB-RING. And like I say, we're just going to be talking about gardening, lawns, vegetables, herbs, trees, shrubs, diseases, bugs, spiders, what else, weeds, you know, anything, you know, tree pruning, whatever. Now, I do sort of draw a line with some things. There's some things that in my experience, and I've got over 40 years experience here doing this sort of stuff on top of degrees from the university and being raised by gardeners and working at garden centers and all like that. But also as my personal experience, my observation, there's a lot of stuff people tell you you need to do that you really don't need to do. You don't need to do some of that stuff. It's not that big a deal. And sometimes the cures are worse than the problem. So I will use a little judgment. And if I think that there's some things, for example, if I think you need to kill something, you know, let's find the I hate to say the best way, the most, there's no way to put it. I'll be as gentle as I can. How about that? You know, we want to get the job done without doing a lot of other damage, you know. So a lot of times I'll recommend mild stuff or natural stuff, even though some natural stuff is more poison than some of the chemicals. We will choose what I think is a good middle road towards doing what you need to do. And if we need to step it up, we can sure do that. But my first approach is take your glasses off and a lot of those problems disappear. That's just the way I look at it because it works. And if I look at my garden too much, I've got everything you've got, I've got twice because I've got a complicated, full, overflowing little cottage garden with all sorts of stuff that naturally can have all sorts of problems and stuff. So anyway, we're going to be philosophical, but we're going to get it done. So give us a call, toll-free, 1-877-MPB-RING. Next week, by the way, we're going to be broadcasting from a special place over in Meridian. Going to be broadcasting live from the Max. Some wonderful cultural art exhibit in downtown, right by the railway station, the main street going to downtown Meridian. It's a fantastic venue. It's just an unbelievable feather in Mississippi's cap, and it's got all Mississippi stuff in it. It's going to be broadcasting, and they said that they will actually let a couple of handful of people who want to come in and sit in the studio when we broadcast this. And if you're interested in that, because of social distancing, they can't allow a lot of people in there. They say, you know, it's the first come, first serve. You want to give them a call, the Max. I'll give the number out in just a few minutes, but the first, I think, 10 or 15 people who call, you can come in and watch while I be a fool on the air. How about that? Anyway, I think they're charging like $5 or something like that. But anyway, I'll give those details in a little while. But first of all, let's get back to what we're supposed to be doing here today. Let's talk about gardening, and we're going to start out in Lower Alabama. Hey, Melanie, thank you for calling.
Oh, good morning.
Howdy, what's up?
Well, I'm trying to separate my tete-a-tete daffodils.
Yep.
And there's also some of those red spider lilies bulbs in there. Is there any way to tell the difference? Now, I've noticed when I dig them up, some of them have a lot of root growth already, and some of them showing none.
The ones with the root growth already are probably going to be the red spider lilies because they're starting to grow already. They look a lot alike, but the tete-a-tetes, the daffodils, are smoother, cleaner, more pointy-looking thing. You know, then they'll, you know, and they'll be in a tighter cluster. You know, it's a really good question, Melanie, because I've grown both of them and they look a lot alike. But I would say the tete-a-tete is going to be in a tighter cluster. They're probably going to be a little bit shallower. They're not as likely to be covered with a rough brown type of covering, but they'll be just cleaner and smoother.
I have noticed that some of them are a lot rougher, as you say, and they look like almost like an onion that hasn't had the absolute outside shell removed.
Yeah. Well, and again, the tete-a-tete, they're small bulbs also. The red spider lilies can be, you know, pretty good size, you know, big as an egg. The tete-a-tetes is a miniature daffodil. They're real small. It'd be a tighter little cluster.
Right. Okay. Now, when I get them separate, basically, they haven't been blooming as well because they've been in such tight, grown so much. So do I go ahead and give them some cottonseed meal now so they can grow their roots over the winter, or do
all these bulbs, they grow their roots starting in the fall. The spider lilies already start to grow their you know, they get a head start. Rather than just cottonseed meal, a fertilizer's got a little everything. Cottonseed meal is my favorite natural source of nitrogen because it feeds the worms, too. It's a good thing for several reasons. But it doesn't have as much phosphorus and potash in it, the second, third number, that bulbs need. So, you know, if you've got any kind of all-purpose fertilizer, you know, I'm talking about just not even a dusting, you know, less than a teaspoon per bulb. Work that into the dirt.
Okay. Now, one other question. I have a big flower bed, mixed perennials, and some, you know, I had some annuals in the spring.
Uh-huh.
And there's an oak tree. Not an oak tree, a magnolia tree.
Ooh.
About 20 feet away, I guess.
Yep.
Do you think it would do any good if I just took the shovel and tried to just cut those magnolia? I can tell they're, I almost hate to fertilize that bed because I feel like it just encourages the magnolia to invade more.
Yeah. Well, in magnolia, magnolia wants to grow, too.
Yeah, I know. But it has, believe me.
It doesn't hurt to answer your question. It doesn't hurt to cut a few roots here and there. It does not. You know, big roots up close to the trunk is like cutting an arm off at the elbow and all the fingers are gone. So, but if you're going to chop a few fingers here and there, it doesn't hurt to dig here and there to do stuff. But by this time next year, those holes are going to be full of more magnolia roots because they grow quick.
Yeah, I was just thinking maybe in the spring I would cut them and give the stuff a chance to, you know, bounce up before the magnolia started sucking everything dry again.
Well, the magnolia, you know, tree roots grow pretty much all the time on the Gulf Coast. As long as the soil is warm and moist, you know, roots continue to grow and absorb stuff, even if the trees are dormant. So anyway, if you want to cut, you know, on the magnolia side of your flower bed every couple of 3 or 4 years, the magnolia is going to survive.
I'm not worried about it surviving, trust me.
Well, I am. Somebody's
flower bed surviving.
Yeah. Well, you know, you might be, it's time to think about, you know, doing a raised bed and growing some, you know, in other words, find ways to accommodate both of them. You know, if you could dig down a little bit and raise it up a little bit, maybe put some containers out there because, you know, you're trying to you've got a whale in a bathtub out there. We got to, the shower curtain is bulging. So anyway. Yeah. All righty.
It's a constant balance trying to, you know, keep both of them happy.
But, yes, it is.
All right. Well, thank you so much. You have a great day.
Thanks, Melanie. Appreciate your call.
All right. Bye-bye.
All righty, folks. 1-877-MPB-RING. Let's go to Ridgeland, Mississippi. Hey, Ardell. Good morning.
Good morning, Felder.
How are you?
I'm good. So I have a question. I found a woman in Georgia that would sell me 10 jujube seeds.
Yeah.
So I planted them and rooted them, and I have one that's about 2 feet tall. And I had to confirm, and I did. I Googled the image of a leaf. I have a jujube.
Mm-hmm.
But The image doesn't show thorns. And my question is, do I have
yep.
a jujube tree that has gone rogue?
Nope, jujube's got thorns.
Well, I didn't see it on the image, so that's good.
Well, you know, they're not bad thorns, you know, but they'll, you know, if you got a branch, when it gets big enough for a branch to hang down where it's going to grab you when you go by with the mower, it'll grab you. But just cut that bit off. But no, jujube's got and a lot of people don't even know what a jujube is. I was raised with one. And by the way, I love the Latin name, Ziziphus jujube. It's got two Z's and two J's. Try that in Scrabble.
I don't think so.
Yeah. But anyway, it's a great Asian plant, fruits up in the summertime. They got a pit in them, you know, I don't know if you've eaten one, but when the fruit starts to get a little wrinkled is when it gets mature, is when it's time to eat it.
Yeah, I love them. I love them, actually. They're so spongy and crunchy.
Yep.
All right, thank you.
Okay, appreciate it.
Bye. Whew,
that was a weird question. Did jujubes have thorns? Boom, nailed that one. Now, we got a lady calling from on the road. Betsy, where are you? Are you got your hands on the wheel or you pulled off or what?
No, I've got my hands on the wheel. I'm talking through a speakerphone.
Good. Well, what's up?
Well, I have tried to get a lettuce bed up twice this year, and it keeps dying.
Mm.
I used soaker hose, and I have got sphagnum peat moss in the bed, and it's sandy loam soil, and I'm just, like, perplexed. What is making this not come up and stand? I'll get a stand, but immediately it seems like a week later it's dead.
You know, and that's really pretty unusual because, lettuce from seed to harvest is only like three or four weeks at the most, you know, something like that. So I don't know. I don't know. If you're keeping it real wet, you know, that could be a problem. The seeds need moisture to sprout, but then they need to be allowed to dry. This little plants need to dry out between watering so that the roots can grow down. If you keep it wet, they'll rot. Also, it could be you're sowing the seeds real thick, you know, real small seeds like that. Need to sow them ever so thinly because if they're crowded, they get diseases and they don't produce. And by the way, one of the easy ways to do that is mix the seeds with a little sand or something like because it's easier to spread a bigger volume. So mix a few seeds with something that you can, you know, grits or sand or something like that. But try not to sow them too thick. Wet them down till they sprout and then wait a day or two between soakings. And see if that doesn't help. But other than that, I have no idea.
Well, I thank you for your input. I thought about just taking my glasses off and see what happens.
And by the way, you know, lettuce is, and this is the time of year to grow lettuce. It's a beautiful plant. And what I do is I mix two or three different kinds together, you know, a little green one, a reddish one, you know, flat leaf, curly leaf. And what I do is I put just a little pinch of each of the seeds in little small pots. You know, you could do it in styrofoam egg cartons. And when they sprout, just transplant, you got a whole little mixed salad growing there. And you can grow them really well in containers where you can, you know, little low containers or small containers where you can watch your watering a little bit easier.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good. I appreciate your input.
Good luck on it.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Goodbye.
You bet. I went out the other day. I had to thin out. I planted carrots and beets. I don't eat that many beets, and I can buy enough carrots. I can buy more carrots that I eat in a year for what the package of seed costs. But they all came up. It took a while, but when they came up, they were real thick. So I went out, got down, and I actually carefully pulled all but, you know, I left them an inch or so apart so that each one will have its own elbow room and they won't make turnips or beets or carrots or they just won't do it. They're crowded. And so I thinned mine out pretty good. Let's go to Poplarville, talk with Beckett. Good morning.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
So far, so good. Appreciate it. What's up?
All right. I kind of do a little side work as a handyman out in the yard helping out folks. And I got a lady who, she's got some roots up under the crawl space of her house. And she said her son told her that he thinks it's from a tree they had near the house and it cut down a couple of years prior. She's not sure what kind it was. There's an existing tree about 10, 15 feet out from the house. And I wanted to see if there was a way I could make sure that before I cut those roots out if they were from the live tree or from the old cut down tree?
That's a good question, because it takes a year or sometimes more for a root that's been cut off the tree. It's made out of wood. It's going to take and fresh wood is going to take a year or two to start to decay. So, right. You know, right at first, you might not be able to tell as well. I will tell you this, most likely the roots can be real shallow, and whether it's from a live tree or the dead tree, probably need to go ahead and get them out. A tree can, you know, if you were to draw a circle, big circle with the dot in the middle, the tree being the dot and the circle being the outer spread of the branches, if you don't cut off more than about a fourth of that area, it's not going to affect the tree that much. See, so okay. It doesn't hurt to go outside her foundation and cut a little trench straight down. And anything right. that's under there, whether it's the dead root, they're all going to decay. It's going to take a little while. The dirt's going to cave in a little bit, but probably going to fill back in with dirt. It replaced. So anyway, I would just go ahead on the outside and just cut down. It won't hurt the trees, and it'll make her feel a whole lot better, and it's a lot easier for you.
Right. She was worried about it rotting under there and termites having an entry point.
That's a really good point. It's a real good concern, but there's not much you can do about that because there's no way to get all those roots out. They're going to be right. solid. You know how they are up under a magnolia tree? That's the way they yeah. all are, except, you know, further out. So she might want to check with the termite company and have them put down some of those little the things they put on the outside to attract the termites and just keep a check on it.
Thank you so much.
It's a good question. Good question, man. Good luck on it.
Thank you. Take care.
All righty. We're going to take a little short break. We've got a caller on the line. I'm horticulturist Fel Rushing, and me and Java, we've got some cheesy music coming up in a little while, and I have an array here. I'm real proud of this. I have an array of vegetables and herbs and things from my garden, and it's taken up about a foot and a half, 2 foot area that's in every color of the rainbow. And it started with a tomato that I picked. I've been watching this tomato all week, waiting for it to ripen. It wouldn't ripen. And I realized, idiot, you planted a yellow fruited variety to begin with. It ain't gonna turn. Anyway, I almost let it get too far, but I've got a golden yellow tomato called Lemon Boy, sweet as it can be, and I said, let me do a rainbow. Anyway, while we're talking about gardening, I'm having fun playing like I'm in kindergarten. Horticulture's Fel Rushing, me and Java Chapman and other folks at MPB, Mississippi Public Broadcasting. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, this is Larry Morrissey with the Mississippi Arts Commission. I'm one of the hosts of the Mississippi Arts Hour, the arts interview show on Think Radio. Each week, myself or one of my fellow hosts bring you in-depth interviews with different creative Mississippians. We talk with visual artists, musicians, writers, as well as people who help bring the arts to their communities. We hear about how each artist learned their craft and get some insight into their creative process. You can hear the Arts Hour every Sunday at 5 p.m. on Think Radio, or listen anytime by subscribing to the show through your favorite podcasting app.
All righty, folks, welcome back. Hey, give us a call. It's toll free. We can talk about gardening. Ain't gonna bite. Ain't gonna holler at you. I think bad stuff about some of you because you do stuff that I think is stupid, but I've done it myself and I survived, and so we'll survive too. So anyway, give us a call and let's talk about gardening. Toll free 1-877-MPB-RING. We're gonna go back down to Mobile, Alabama. Talk with John. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Felder.
How are you?
I have a question about bananas, or what I thought until last year were plantains.
Mm-hmm.
But I had asked, there's a couple that own a little donut shop up the road from me, and I asked if they wanted some plantains, and they said, sure. I cut some down, took them to them, and they advised me that they were Thai bananas.
Huh.
And they further said, you cut them too soon. And I'm going, okay, how do you know when to cut them? Because they don't ripen on the tree, as I recall.
Well, and most, you know, I eat bananas all the time. And I've had plantains. They're like tough, fibrous bananas. And there's so many different kinds of bananas. There's a place over in Louisiana that specializes in colder, hardy fruit. They have 9 or 10 different kinds of bananas that are hardy on the coast. See, so, and I can't tell them apart without, you know, really looking it up. But most of the time they're picked green and then they ripen.
Right.
Matter of fact, a ripe banana is really decay. You know, they once you pick these off the plant, whether it's banana or tomato, once you pull it off the plant, it does not continue to ripen. It may soften up and may color up a little bit, but it doesn't get any sweeter or more flavorful. So in the case of banana type fruit, you really need to leave them on there until they're almost too far gone to eat. Or else you pick them a little bit early and let them slowly ripen or slowly mature where you can't eat them, like you see the green bananas in the store. But if you right. pick it way too early, like tomatoes, everybody knows you pluck a tomato, it's got some color, put it on the windowsill, it'll turn red and get softer. But if you pick it where it's too green, it's not going to mature. It's just going to decay. So it's a fine line. What they're telling you is don't pick them all. Pick them a little at a time and watch what happens.
Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, not a great answer, but, you know, there's the bottom line is you need to pick them before they're ripe or else they're going to rot before we get back to the kitchen. But if you pick them too early, then they're not far enough progressed to go ahead and continue to what we call ripen.
Right. Okay. Well, I figure it's a little too soon now because they seem to still have little flowery things on the tips of them.
Yeah, and this is, you know, like I say, if you've ever seen them harvesting bananas with machetes and stuff, they're big old the whole cluster of green. But some varieties do flower over a long period of time, so the early flowers are actually making fruit that's ready to eat before they finish blooming. So that's one of the reasons why a lot of people don't know about this, because the commercial varieties we use have been designed to ripen evenly. A lot of the unusual varieties, you know, they have real interesting, like heirloom tomatoes. Some of them are butt ugly, you know, and so, and they ripen at different stages, so they're not good commercial varieties. So you've got a better home variety, and you might want to just pick a few at a time and see what happens. Play around with it.
Okie dokie. All right. Appreciate it.
Okay. Appreciate your call. I stumble around a lot on that, but it's true. When you pick a tomato, it does not get riper. It doesn't get sweeter. Doesn't get more flavorful. It just goes ahead and colors up and starts to soften and decay. And that's the reason why homegrown tomatoes seem to taste so much better, because you leave them on the vine until they're got all their goodness in them, whereas the ones you get at the store have been picked where they're what they call the pink stays. They're showing just a little color, and they're shipped. And by the time you get them, you know, they're red and they're soft, but, you know, they were picked weeks before they could get all the sweetness and goodness in them. So, anyway, let's go up to Pontotoc. Let's go up to the Hill Country and talk with Judy in Pontotoc. Hey, Judy, good morning.
Hey, Felder. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
Quick question. Muscadine vine.
Mm-hmm.
I have a wonderful muscadine vine. When to prune and how to prune? As I fret through my question.
By the way, I was raised with muscadines. My family had the first winery in the state since Prohibition. I've been growing muscadines since the 70s, long, long time. And if you don't prune them every year, they get, within 2 years, they get just unmanageable. So you really need to prune muscadines every year. And what you do is you follow the branch from the tip end to all the way, right now, all the way to where it started growing back in the spring. And if you don't do, whether you pruned it or not, it's going to flower next year and make grapes right in the first one or two leaf joints of this year's growth. So what most commercial growers do is they'll follow from the end of the branch to back to where it started in the spring, and they'll cut it off, leaving just one or two leaf joints.
Okay.
And what grows off of that next year will have berries. And it's not easy, because they can go, you know, 8-10 feet, and they can wrap stuff up, and you pull them, they slap you across the face, you know, and they got those little twisty things, the tendrils that wrap around things, and it takes me a good 12 or 15 minutes to prune a muscadine vine that's in good shape. I mean, you think there's 100 or more per acre, that's a lot of time. But anyway, cut everything back that grew this year, leaving short stubs, one or two branches, and if you still have a whole bunch of stuff left over, cut some of that off. Thin it out.
I'm not going to kill it.
No, you're not going to kill it. Now, if you do it this time of year, or if you wait, best done in the wintertime. Ain't no yellow jackets there.
Right.
All that kind of stuff. So anytime in the winter, after they drop the leaves, if you do it early or if you do it late, they tend to drip sap. That's what they call it. They look like they're bleeding. Does not hurt the plant at all.
So in the winter?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Great, but
if you're not angry and feel like you've been brutal, you haven't pruned enough.
All right.
Trust me on this. Okay, Judy.
Okay, thanks so much.
You bet. Appreciate it. Now, Jav, I sent you a couple of tunes. I'm not sure which one you're going to go with.
Well, you told me, actually, you did something that you don't normally do. You planned ahead and sent me something for next week.
For next week, yeah.
I know which one I'm going to go with this week.
Okay, well, the one next week is a Jimmy Rogers tune, because we're going to be broadcasting from the Max in Meridian, and that's they celebrate Mississippi art, culture, and art. And Jimmy Rogers, known worldwide as the father of country music, from Meridian, Mississippi. So that's the reason I chose that ahead of time.
Now, before we go to the cheesy tune, we had a caller. She couldn't stay on the line, but she wanted you to talk about the Wiggins plant swap. I guess she missed the information.
Not Wiggins. I'm drawing a total blank.
The plant swap.
In Hattiesburg.
Okay, there we go.
Hattiesburg. It's going to be in a park right along the Leaf River in Hattiesburg. That's not for a couple of weeks, and I can't remember the exact, I have to look it up while we're doing the music, because I can't remember stuff like that. But anyway, we got a couple of three weeks before that happens. Anyway, I'm Horticulture's Fella Rushing, me and Java Chapman and the other folks here at MPB. I've got what I think is a beautiful arrangement of stuff that I picked this morning from my garden, some berries, a couple of wildflowers that are terrific in salads. I've got red peppers, yellow peppers, green peppers, purple basil, green basil, blue kale, orange sweet potatoes, orange persimmons, and a burgundy okra. It is a rainbow that I picked out of my garden this morning. And get this. I didn't grow any of them as vegetables. I grew them because they're pretty, and they are pretty. But when I get home, I'm going to dump all these in a bucket of water, throw in a pinch of salt, and I'm going to have me a rainbow stew. We'll be right back with more of the Gestalt Gardener here at MPB right after this.
Search and find a better way to talk. I'm gonna spit and polish my old rough edge self till I get rid of every single flaw. I'm gonna be the world's best friend. I'm gonna go around shaking everybody's hand. Hey,
Deep South Dining is the show all about the culture of Southern flavor, from fried chicken and collard greens to shrimp and grits and a glass of sweet tea. Subscribe now to the podcast using any podcast app or download our MPB public media app.
All righty, folks, welcome back. Horticulture's Fella Rushing. I just took a picture we're going to put on our podcast today. It's of my rainbow stew that I grew from the garden. I'm bragging a little bit here because I had a yellow tomato I thought was going to be red, and it never would turn red. I forgot I planted a yellow fruited variety. But I've got red and green jalapeno peppers, orange sweet potatoes, a persimmon, yellow tomato, got some goldenrod, which is a terrific native edible plant, green basil, purple basil, burgundy basil, purple American beauty berry. I've got kale with the blue stems and burgundy okra. And it all came from flower bed in my front yard. Flower bed, you know. So you don't have to be an expert and have a big garden or a Troy-built tiller and all that stuff to have stuff that's pretty, and you can eat it when you're tired of looking at it. Let's go down to Bassfield and see what Trish is up to. Hey, Trish, good morning.
Good morning. Howdy. I abhor admitting this, but I don't know what a jujube is.
It's a good, you know, a lot of people don't know what pawpaw is. We've heard of pawpaws all of our
life. I know. I got a pawpaw tree, so I know what they are.
Well, see, there's a lot of people that don't have a clue what a pawpaw is. Jujube is a smallish, medium-sized tree. It's got pretty leaves. You know, they're green, but they got nice little veins in them, small thorns. But the fruit is, it's about like a small pawpaw. It's, you know, the small ones are about the size of my big thumb. You know, they get a little bit bigger, and they've got a pit in them like an olive, and they're just delightful fruit. You know, there's not anything that tastes quite like it, but it's sort of like eating a pawpaw. You know how it's got a bunch of seeds. It just has one seed.
Right, bunch of seeds.
Yeah. And my great-grandmother grew all sorts of weirds. She was a horticulturist, so I was raised with these kind of things, and I just thought they were normal. And then I tried to use jujube in a Scrabble game one time, and it wasn't but one J, so I had to use up my blank.
I love it. I love it. One more question.
Mm-hmm.
Now, getting back to muscadine, Ed Norton was my daddy, and he planted his in 68, I think. That's the date that's on my list I have.
It's been a while.
But, yes, and he was back and forth to Mississippi State when he did it.
Yep.
But can we cut them once there's a good freeze and the leaves are all off? We don't have to wait till January?
Sure. I mean, you know, it's closer to fall now where they're not going to sprout back out, so you could go ahead and do that. But anytime, you know, after they start dropping their leaves up until, you know, until they start producing in the spring. And,
well, we're still picking right this minute. And there's still a lot of leaves out of we're in Jones County. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no, there's no problem with that at all. And a matter of fact, you can make good holiday wreaths with the cuttings.
Oh, I have bunches of them. In fact, I have one I'll be putting on my door for Christmas.
Good. Excellent day.
Yes. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Muscadines, by the way, are native to the Southeast. They're not bunch grapes. They make clusters of berries. Sometimes there's a lot of berries in there, but they're more adapted to our hot, humid, low chill winter climate than a lot of the bunch grapes that grow further north. You know, a lot of people, they plant things like Concord grape and Niagara grape and all those. They produce in upstate Pennsylvania. That's where they want to grow. Yeah, they'll make down here, but the ones you see, the big vineyards of Concord grape, upstate New York, Pennsylvania, places like that, and the really bunch grapes in the milder climates of, we can grow them, but muscadines are great. A lot of people don't like it because they have a strong flavor, because they haven't tried some of the varieties. There's some new varieties that are delightful. Some have got a skin that's crisp, and you can eat it. Some are sweet. Some are not so sweet. Some got a lot of juice. Some got a lot of pulp. Make a great pie. But anyway, there's a lot of different kinds of muscadines, so if you're lumping them all together, saying I don't like muscadines because they're bleh, well, it's because you were raised with a bleh variety. Anyway, let's go to Woodville and talk with Larry. Larry, you're from way on up there.
Yeah, how you doing this morning?
I'm fine. Isn't Woodville? Isn't that where the highest point in Mississippi is?
I don't know about that. We down here below Natchez.
Okay. Oh, I got the wrong Woodville. I'm thinking there's a place up north. Somebody help me out on this. Anyway, what's going on?
Yeah, I'm a Choctaw Indian living down here. And my dad was the chief of the Louisiana Band of Choctaw, and I've moved to reorganize the old Choctaw Nation here in Mississippi. And I want to get some land to reestablish a reservation here, and I want to do it in native-type plants and the wild persimmons and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I'd like to do a show sometime specifically on Mississippi native plants that Native Americans use and their foods, roots, and type stuff like that.
Well, I can sure do that. You know, because you know my ancestors came here. You know, 200 years ago, and we had to eat off the land. And by the way, let me throw this out. The chief of the Choctaw Nation was on the flag commission to design the new flag, a new Mississippi right. flag. And it's got the stars on it, but the star at the very top is a golden star, and it's broken up into diamonds, and it's the diamond star that represents the Choctaws. And a lot of people don't realize that. That's on there. I actually went out and helped design a landscape in Oklahoma. I can't remember the name of the town right now. Just drawing a blank. But at the headquarters of the Choctaw Nation in Oklahoma, I designed a garden for them that included plants that were from Mississippi that had useful to the indigenous people. And so, yeah, I've got that. If you'll shoot me an email, I can send. I've got a really good list of native Mississippi native plants that are suitable for landscape. They're pretty plants. They do well. They're good ornamental plants and have useful, you know, you can eat part of, you know, there's a lot of different benefits, but of plants that are suitable for good looking landscapes that are native to Mississippi. They were here before Europeans got here. So I, you know, if you'll shoot me an email, I'll be glad to help you with that. That'd be a lot of fun.
Several years ago, I was in the swamps along the Mississippi River, and I grew up hunting in swamps with my dad and uncles and all the old men, and I gathered some wild persimmons. I brought them home and let them, you know, I got the seeds and set them out on my porch and let them dry, and then a friend of mine says, wait till December, and so the middle of December, I stuck them in the ground about finger deep, and they sprouted. And I waited the next year, and I took and transplanted. And that's what I've been doing around my house here in Woodville, is putting wild persimmons up, because we've lost all these native trees and plants, you know, due to logging over the years, you know.
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, I picked a persimmon on my way in this morning, and it's not quite right. But you know, persimmon is just one. We've got the American beautyberry, which I've got here. There's just tons and tons and tons of useful indigenous plants that are also, you know, provide food, or I don't get into medicinal stuff, but even medicine. But they have got historic use for fiber and for dyes and things like that. And there's a really good lesson for children and for grown-ups. Anyway, I'll be real glad to help you with that, Larry.
My grandfather was a gifted medicine man and a healer. People used to come to him for healing, removing warts. So if you had a horse or a cow down, he would go and treat them too. And, you know, I learned some things, and I've been in, you know, I'm a member of the Native American Church, and I go up to Philadelphia often and meet with up there some of the medicine people. And the elder up there is using self-heal plant to treat coronavirus. He's treated about 15 people in every one.
Okay. Okay. Now, I'm not trying to cut you off on this, but there's several plants that are reported to be that way, but I do not get into medicinal herbs. I don't, for legal reasons. I'm a stick with growing the stuff. When it comes to using it, stuff like that, whether it's that or elderberry or whatever, I've got the research, I've got the books, I've got all that stuff, but I just don't talk about it on the radio. We stick with stuff that then they, you know, if somebody misunderstands what you or I say, it could get bad real quick. But anyway, now to answer your question, we've got some terrific native plants that have all sorts of use for food, fiber, medicine, dyes, all that kind of stuff that I can help you with. Be glad to.
Well, that's what I'm looking into is like some of the medicine plants, too.
Yeah. Well, I won't get into that because of legal reasons, but when it comes to eating, we can or making dye or weaving into baskets and stuff, we can do that.
Right.
Anyway, shoot me an email. And then let's get started on this.
I like to hear you talk about some of these native plants, you know. And
I try to every single week. But like I say, if you want to come up with a good looking garden that's all useful native plants, we can sure do that.
All right. Look, y'all have a blessed day. Enjoy your show.
Appreciate it, Larry. And again, I really appreciate the chief making sure that the Choctaw, that the diamond star is on the proposed Mississippi flag.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
You bet. See ya.
Bye.
All righty, folks. We've got the lines open. I'm just drawing a total blank here on the date for the plant swap that's going to be in Hattiesburg, but it's going to be, I want to say, the second Saturday in October. Got a little while. But next week, we are going to have a special program. I'm going to be broadcasting the Gestalt Gardener, Mississippi's broadcasting it from the studios at the Max in Meridian. The Max in Meridian. I've got the details, the phone number, the email. If you're interested in that, shoot me an email, because I can't remember stuff like that on the air. But next Saturday, this is next Friday morning. On Saturday, I'm doing a presentation at the Max. They have limited audience because of the coronavirus, but they're letting folks in. And we're going to have a little plant swap. I'll give a lot more details about that next week if you're interested. But they have limited seating, so you're going to have to call ahead to get on a list. However, it's going to be streamed live. So my talk on yard art, the good, the bad, and the unbelievable, it's going to be on yard art, is going to be streamed live a week from tomorrow on Saturday, October the 3rd. We're going to be so you can watch it, you know, on your TV. They'll have it on YouTube. You can look at it later, but it'll be a live event streamed. And I think they're going to have a couple of dozen or so people who can come to it. Anyway, I'll give more details about that a little bit later, but If you're interested in attending this, you need to let them know ahead of time. And the best way to do that is shoot me an email, and I can get you that. I'll give it out in just a few minutes. But if you're interested, you're going to have to contact the Max ahead of time. I'm Horticulturist Felder Rushing. I've been having fun with my rainbow harvest right here. It's so pretty. It's pretty enough to eat. I think I will eat it. Anyway, if we can take a real quick break and come back with more of the Gestalt Gardener here at Mississippi Public Broadcasting right after this.
On Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit, you get information about foods you should eat to stay in good health and tips on how to stay active. I'm Dr. Josie Bidwell, host of Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit, and Associate Professor of Preventive Medicine at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. Listen to the show every Monday at 11, or subscribe to the podcast by searching for Southern Remedy with your preferred podcasting app.
All right, folks, welcome back. I was stumbling around trying to find out the website. If you want to register for this thing at the Max next week, whether it's the live broadcast on Friday or else the yard art talk and plant swap on Saturday, it's www.msarts.org, msarts.org for Mississippi Arts. And they got a thing about the Gestalt Gardener event. But anyway, go to the website, msarts.org. That'll get you to that. Also had a fellow who wanted to know, what was I talking about last week about piling dirt up? I mean, piling logs and stuff and turning dirt. It's called Hugel culture. H-U-G-L-E culture. Starts with a K. Hugel culture. But if you'll just do H-U-G-L-E, it'll take it from there on most search engines. But it's where you put logs, branches, logs, limbs, branches, leaves, throwing a little dirt, throw some compost. In other words, just make you a big old leaf pile. And then the next spring, you can start planting there. And as it all decomposes, it retains moisture, it gives off nutrients. It's just a terrific little way to grow stuff, particularly where ground is too hard to dig. My friend Jesse Yancey does it on concrete. Just pile stuff up, and it takes a little while to get started. When you throw some old compost on top, you can start quicker. But it becomes a never-ending leaf pile when you grow stuff around the edges in the middle of it. Hugel culture or mound culture. So I'll just mound stuff up. Anyway, Timothy's been hanging on for a long time from Louisiana. Hey, Timothy, thank you for holding, man. What's up?
Good morning. You know what you're just talking about there, Hugel culture. I like to use it in raised beds. You know, when I make a box and before I put soil in it, I put logs and twigs and such down in there.
How long? But when you first do that, I'm gonna say it takes. You know, you could probably start planting around the edges right off the bat, but I'm gonna say give it a couple of 3 months to start breaking down. What do you think?
I go right in on it.
Just go right in.
Yeah,
we ain't wasting time. We jump right in. But anyway, it's an easy, it's an easy way to do it. I learned this from Neil Odenwald, who's a professor of landscape architecture over at LSU. He had a big yard, and he would start piling, instead of dragging limbs to the street or burn pile, he would just put them between trees and then throw stuff and basically connect the base of the trees with stuff. And ended up growing ferns and impatiens and azaleas, and he said it cut his mowing time in half.
Yeah, Sepp Holzer is one of the greats on that subject. Sepp Holzer, I think it is.
But it's an ancient concept. Pile stuff up, yes. Start planting stuff there.
Yes.
So what you got going on?
Well, I'm wondering when to harvest wapato.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, come on now.
It's not the elephant ear, is it?
No. Wapato is arrow leaf.
It's a native plant. With the arrowhead-shaped leaves, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you can pretty well do it all year, but traditionally fall and winter.
All right.
I don't see why you couldn't do it all year because the plants are perennials. But yep, I don't know. There may be some weird alkaloids or something going during the growing season. So there may be a season when it's safer. Some native plants, you know, you have to boil them twice to get rid of certain alkaloids and all that stuff.
I've got another question for you, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
Elderberry. Why are our southern Louisiana elderberries are like the size of BBs, and the ones in Oklahoma are the size of grapes?
Different species.
So I could go up there and get them, bring them down here, and plant them, and I'd have a nice...
Sure. I mean, okay. And the elderberry that's used in Europe, we see a lot of elderberry trees along the hedgerows. They're whole different plants. They're woody plants. Ours are perennials. So there's several different species of elderberries. All righty. Okay, man, we got to scoot. We got to go down to Mobile and talk with Lee. Hey, Lee, good morning. Lee.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Okay, Lee, for some reason, can't hear us. So we're going to slide over to Ruth in Wiggins. Hey, Ruth, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm calling for my sister.
Mm-hmm.
She knows I listen to you all the time. And she said, are you on there with him? I said, no, but I can be. So she's, you know, the bay leaves you put in your savory dishes, you know, the bay leaves.
Right.
She wants to know if those are the same one as that grow wild around there. She's got some.
There is a native bay that's used. It's not the same species. The one that most people use, a culinary bay, is a Mediterranean plant. But there is a native bay. I don't remember the species. I can't remember the details. But there is a native plant that's used as a bay substitute. They call it bay leaf.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the details.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll take a picture of it and send it to you.
If you'll do that, then I can I have your email. I'll send back I've got the information at home. I just can't, you know, I got an old computer for a brain. It doesn't have much memory space.
Okay. Thanksgiving is a little way away, so she'll be able to have that information before then.
Oh, yeah. She'll have it the day I get it.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Phil. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Ruth. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
We can try Lee again. Lee, are you there?
I'm here.
Hooray! We're on the air. What's up?
Oh, great. I recently moved to a house that has three crepe myrtles across the front.
Uh-huh.
And I like them, but they have lots of shoots coming up from the ground. And I would like to prune some of those away and leave, like, maybe three or four to become the trunk.
Right.
And just wondered, when is the time to prune those, and is there any particular technique I need to know other than cut them off at the ground?
Yeah, it's a good question. No, just cut it off at the ground. Where, you know, okay. if you leave a stem, if you cut a plant and leave a stem, it's going to branch out right where you make the cut. If you cut it off flush with where it's starting to grow, cut a branch off flush with the limb or limb off with the trunk or the trunk with the ground, it won't sprout back out. In other words, just don't leave any kind of stub and it won't sprout back out. But you can do this. You can remove things as if they were never there anytime you get around to it. But if you're going to just cut stuff back in general to make it bush out, it's best to not do that this time of year because it doesn't have time for the new growth to toughen up before winter, you know, even down on the coast. So most hard pruning to make plants bush back out is done in the winter, the spring, the early summer, up until about the middle of the summer. Anyway, if you're just cutting stuff off as if it were never there, only leaving what you want, you can do that anytime you get around to it.
All right. That's great to know. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it.
F. Elder, I think earlier you were trying to figure out the highest point in Mississippi.
It's Wood something, ain't it?
Woodall Mountain.
Woodall Mountain.
In Iuka.
There you go. I've been up there. It's got a little thing up the top. It's the highest point in Mississippi. I think it's like 800 feet or whatever.
That's it, 800.
Hey, listen, I got me a sack of goodies, but I'm going to give you this picture I just took of all these rainbow-colored things I picked out of my garden. And also, I brought this thing. I dropped my cook kettle, my big black chili pot last night, and it broke. I didn't think you could break these things. So I've got to get me a new cooking kettle. I got to season it and get all that kind of stuff. So I've got my weekend cut out for me. Going to plant a few things and basically enjoy this cool, cool weather, folks. I'm horticulturist Felder Rushing. Me and the folks here at Mississippi Public Broadcasting. Hope to see some of y'all in Meridian next week at the MAC when we broadcast live. But meanwhile, if you have a chance to go to a farmer's market, take a kid or a new couple on the street, or a garden center, it's important that we share with others how to do what we do best, and that's get dirty. See y'all next week.